Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party Network. Every 2 weeks, we look at two films from the A24 filmography, and in between, we bring you interviews with the talent involved in those films. This week, we're joined by Alana White, who plays one of the Abundant Life choir singers in Paul Schrader's masterpiece, First Reformed. Alana shares with us how she was cast in the film, her experience on set and working with Paul Schrader and Ethan Hawke, the performance of Are You Washed in Blood that would also soundtrack a trailer viewed nearly 6 million times, and much more in this interview special. Thanks to Alana for joining us, and I hope you too will enjoy this episode. Always like to kickstart these things by kind of learning what attracts people to the creative industries and finding out what your story was.
Sure, yeah. So I grew up in New York City. So I was exposed to a lot of arts and culture from a young age, which I'm really lucky about. My parents took me to see a lot of theater when I was a kid. So it's always been a huge part of my life, theater and museums and just really everything about the arts. Like, I never cared about sports or things like that. I always was just that kid that wanted to see that next Broadway show or wanted to go to that new museum. So it kind of stuck with me throughout my adult life. I think there's something really lovely about arts and culture that I've always been drawn to, just having to do with how focused you can be on just simply purely being creative. I think that's a really beautiful thing. That's kind of what drew me to it, and I figured out, man, maybe I can trick people into paying me for this, and somehow it worked. So yeah.
What were your kind of your inspiration and influences that you kind of looked up to when you were sort of, you know, you're kind of getting towards this industry, of the actors or people that you were maybe looking up to? Who did you maybe see yourself kind of perhaps emulating?
So I would say that Juno, starring Ellen Page, was a huge influence on me as a kid. I saw that movie in theaters, and I had never seen a representation of somebody that was so similar to me, and I had never seen an actor quite like Ellen Page. And I also, still to this day, have been heavily into music as well, not just, you know, music in theater terms, but I've listened to a lot of music. I love new music. I love collecting new music. I love the feeling that music has when it completely perfects the atmosphere. And I felt like that movie encompassed everything that it was kind of about, both music wise. I mean, the soundtrack was so formative to my adolescence, and still to this day I listen to the songs, and it's just so good. And it's so amazing to me that so many indie artists could get compiled in sort of one grandiose playlist and blow up like that was just so cool to me. And then the reception behind the film, the aesthetic behind the film, down to the cinematography, down to the language they used. I mean, the language that they used in that film to convey that story blew my freaking mind. So that was a huge, huge, heavy influence on me. And I think a lot of the indie films that came after that always interested me and influenced me. I mean, as a kid, shortly after that, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist came out, which was, again, very heavily music influenced. And then off the top of my head as an adult, I would say that indie films like Me and Earl and The Dying Girl is like an end-all be-all indie film for me. I mean, God, it's such an incredibly beautiful film. So I've always kind of been drawn to that style and that the way that they marry so many different forms of art into one cohesive thing really has always kind of caught my eye and made me feel like, wow, I wanna participate in that.
How did you sort of transition from this passion into turning it into like a professional career?
So a lot of work. You really kind of have to hustle. I did go to school for it. I ended up going to NYU, Tisch drama. But largely, it doesn't really matter where you go to school. It really just kind of matters how driven you are, how good you are with people, and kind of looking in the right places. Now, obviously, not all of those are a magic ticket to it, but I think I've gotten really, really lucky. But I also have had a ton of resources at my disposal, growing up in New York and living in New York. So it really just kind of took a lot of guts and a lot of just not getting disappointed and not letting, any sort of criticism or critique or rejection get you down. There's just so much rejection, which I feel like gets overshadowed by these wonderful opportunities that people have, but it is a ton of rejection, it's a ton of being told no over and over and over again. But I've always felt like if you risk asking for something, the worst they can say is no, and the best they can say is yes, and they'll help you. And I think that's always kind of been my ticket, is just never being afraid to ask for an opportunity.
For those that might be kind of tuning in and familiar with your work in First Reformed, what's the kind of work that you would recommend people would maybe seek out or kind of recommend from sort of your back catalogue before then?
So I did a spot on Law and Order SVU a few years back. That was really cool. It's an episode called Holden's Manifesto. It's very timely. It's unfortunately about a school shooter. So it was shot, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, but it's insane to me how it's only gotten more and more relevant. It's a very amazing episode of Law and Order SVU. And then it's funny, before I shot First Reformed, I played a lead in a movie called Bully, that stars Danny Trejo and Tucker Albrizzi. So that's kind of from my backlog because I shot it before First Reformed, but it actually just came out on December 31st of 2019. So it's very fresh and it's out there in the world. So yeah, so they can check that out. That's out now, which is really exciting. And I play the goth girlfriend, which 15-year-old me is very excited about.
I bet your iPod's filled with some classic goth tracks on there, so
Oh,
to go along with the Juno score.
absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of Kimbra Dawson and My Chemical Romance was the soundtrack of my childhood.
I
So
feel we're maybe
it's
kind of similar in attitudes here. Like as you're talking about like the Juno soundtrack, I suppose I'm 33, but like I remember seeing Juno the film. I had the soundtrack, and then I went to see Kimya Dawson like live, and I still listen to that
yes.
soundtrack. It still kind of hits the right spots. I've maybe watched the film only once, but I've tapped that soundtrack so many times on that iPod that is still holding on to this day.
Yeah, it's so good. It's just so good. And I mean, I totally relate to that, which is so funny. And my boyfriend and I talk about that all the time. We're like, wow, it really stuck. It really is timeless. It has that indie vibe that really can kind of, it could have come out 40 years ago, it could have come out yesterday, it could have come out in 2000, whatever it was, 7 or 8 when it came out. But that's so funny. That's awesome.
So, when did you sort of first hear about First Reformed? When did it come to your attention?
So, First Reformed was a really funny story, actually, because I did not actually audition for the movie. I had not heard about it before. I got a phone call from my agents. I actually had just signed with them in April or May of that year. Like maybe 2 months later, I booked Bully. And I was, it was just like one of my first or second auditions with them. So I really felt like I paid my dues for a while, and, you know, I wasn't really banking on anything exciting happening. And then in about January, I get this phone call from my agents, and I'm like, hey, how are you? And they're like, we're great. You know, we're great because we're looking at a booking for you. And I was kind of like, I haven't gone on any auditions lately. Like, I don't know what you could be talking about. And they tell me that the casting director booked me off of videos that I had of me singing online, and they wanted me to come in to shoot this movie, First Reformed. And I was, of course, like, oh my God, yeah. I didn't know what it was. They basically summed it up that it was an indie film that Paul Schrader, who is an absolute legend, of course, was directing, and that Ethan Hawke and Amanda Seyfried were in. But I really didn't know any sort of plot or any sort of information about the film until after I was given that offer. And then, of course, I looked it up, and I was like, oh my gosh, this looks so amazing. I would absolutely love to be a part of this. And then that was when they assigned us that hymn that we sing in the movie, which, you know, context clues would lead me that, okay, it's very church-centric, and, you know, we're singing very classical church hymns, which, yeah, so that was kind of my introduction to it, which is a pretty awesome introduction. I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I got that phone call.
I was wondering that when kind of was I was kind of watching it and thinking about your role. I was wondering, were they like a group of kind of choir singers? Did you kind of do things together? You know, and then they've, it seems like they've kind of brought you all in together individually. What was that like to kind of then prepare as a group for singing these songs, to making sure that you are all in the right kind of tone and making sure that you're the right fit together?
Yeah, it was a really crazy experience, honestly. I think that it was such an amazing group of professional singers that we were able to do it in this way. But basically, they sent us this hymn, Blood of the Lamb, that you can both hear in the movie. And also, they ended up using it for the trailers, which blew my mind. We didn't know how many people were going to be singing with us, because, you know, a choir can be anywhere between the five of us, really, which is what was in the movie. And when I was growing up, I was in choirs of like 30 or 40 kids. So they gave us the hymn, and they were basically like, hey guys, here's the hymn that you're singing. Here's a little recording of it. Pick a harmony. Like, just reply to this email with whatever harmony you want. And I really wasn't picky, but the other girl who was singing with us chose the high harmony before I got there. So I was like, okay, cool. I guess I'm going to be singing the low harmony now, which is, you know, totally fine with me. And I learned the low harmony on our own time. We didn't meet up before we shot the film, which is really a testament to how talented all of the other singers were. And we basically got there at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and we rehearsed it a few times together in the church, without literally ever singing the song ever before, and it worked, and everybody learned their harmonies. And then the recording that you hear both in the film and on the trailer were shot and recorded in the church live, which I thought was really cool, because that's literally a recording of five people singing a song who had never met before that day.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was a really cool process. So it was very, very interesting. 'Cause I have a good amount of experience singing with the different, either musical theater composers around the city, or, you know, bands around the city. So it's always interesting to see how different people will do it. But that's how it happened with First Reformed, which was really cool.
What was that kind of first day like on set? Like, when you're getting into the costume, you have this, frankly, amazing sort of abundant life polo t-shirt,
yes,
the chinos, yes. Like, the look is absolutely nailed there. What was it like sort of getting into the costume and then knowing that you've kind of got this performance to do in front of Ethan Hawke, some of the other cast members, Paul Schrader, in this sort of large kind of empty mega church, really?
Yeah, it was honestly amazing. I was so starstruck. I really, like, between shooting First Reformed and all my other projects, it's always hilarious to me just how starstruck I am those first few hours I'm on set. Because I can't believe that I get to do this. But yeah, so like I said, we got there really around 5 o'clock in the morning, which is always a really fun experience because, you know, when you live in the city and you're a local hire, you're getting yourself to a checkpoint to then get transportation to the place. Or you're potentially getting yourself to the place. But this particular church we shot at in the middle of Jamaica, Queens, which is really cool for me because I'm from Queens. So I was really excited I got to shoot in Queens. But we literally get this email, you know, day beforehand, like, hey, be at this unnamed street corner at 3:30 in the morning in Manhattan, and, you know, an unsaved number is going to text you and you're going to get into the van, and, you know, the van's going to take you to the middle of Queens, which is such a funny way to put it because it's just like, that's acting for you. It's totally legit, but it's just such a weird thing. And so you get to the place and it's 5 o'clock in the morning. And at this point, for me personally, I know better than to do hair and makeup before I get there because I know they're going to put us in hair and makeup. And we got into hair and makeup immediately. We also weren't sure about what context we were singing the song in before we got to set. Like, I didn't know whether or not it was, you know, the Abundant Life resident youth choir or what it was going to be. But we get herded to the makeup trailer, and I will never forget the moment. I'm sitting in the makeup chair, and this man walks in the door, and he's pretty unassuming, and he has this cape on and this big black wide brim hat, and I didn't really think anything of it because I'm just, you know, doing the makeup. And everybody's like, oh, Ethan's here. Oh, good morning, Ethan. Oh, morning, Ethan. How are you? And Ethan is like, hey, how are you guys? Hey. And then I look up and I can see him through the mirror and he's behind me and it's Ethan Hawke. And I was like, oh, that's the Ethan you're talking about. Like, wow. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I don't know why I didn't put two and two together. But the most interesting part, I think, about the costuming and the hair and makeup was the movie very deliberately had a complete lack of color. And I had this strip of, like, bluish green in the back of my hair that was so temporary, but it was growing out, and you could see just ever so slightly the smallest amount of blue green, and the makeup artist actually had to hide it behind my ponytail because she was like, you can't have any color in this film, even though you're playing kids. The palette is very specific, which I thought was fascinating to me. It was really, really cool to hear. So you know, makeup was pretty simple. They let me wear my actual real glasses in the film, which is always a treat. Those purple glasses have become very iconic to my life. But yeah, the Abundant Life Church polos, my goodness, do I wish I could have kept one. I wish they had them as souvenirs. They were so epic. So yeah, we basically had our own shoes, but they had the Abundant Life polos, and then they had, I really truly think they were children's boy size Gap chino pants. They were amazing. They were like everything that you would never want to wear, but that's why they were so amazing. And yeah, and it was a really cool experience to just get there and them kind of hand them out and be like, so here's your wardrobe for today. It was very, very, very cool.
The one thing that stood out for me with the performance is, yeah, you guys sing a hell of a hymn, but there's this little moment that I just would love to know what kind of is going on. So there's the moment when you are performing in front of the, you know, Ethan Hawke's character and this, the kind of the can't remember exact, you know, role within the church, but you are doing your performance, and one of the guys behind Pinches, the taller girl, the one that managed to get the higher part of the hymn, and she has a sort of, there's a little giggle, there's a little bit of tomfoolery there, and you have this eye roll of like, you know, there's so much you can look at going, I wonder what's going on there. Is this like an eye roll of like, you sexist pig, or like, oh, it's you guys again? And it's just this little moment you think, that didn't almost need to be in there, it could have just been this choir. But there's this element of kind of character that Schrader's built in somehow into this sort of dynamic with this youth choir. What was the kind of direction behind that moment? And what was it like to throw your, like, your ultimate kind of shade to, at the direction of these two other choir members?
Yeah, that was a really fun moment. So one of the things that I love about being on set and about acting, particularly on camera and being on set, I mean, I love being in a rehearsal room as well, because it's very similar, but you get on set and you have a script, or sometimes you don't. We didn't have a script, we didn't have the text on a page, we just had the song we were singing, and we knew it would be worked in, you know, one way or another. But basically, when we were standing there in the church, you know, we're kids in a youth choir. And I think one thing that the movie does so beautifully is there are these flecks of irony throughout it, which is so interesting to me, because it is, at its core, it's a very heavy film. But, you know, the direction was given, he was like, well, we should have you guys do something that's a little bit greater than just standing there and singing. So we got the direction that the two of them were going to have that little, like, hair pull or back twill or whatever it was going to be, and that we should have some sort of general reaction to it. And I mean, honestly, my impulse was just to go with a very classic, like, I can't believe you guys are doing this again. Like, you know, that very much by the books, kind of nerdy, she's just there to sing, you know. And he really liked it, and they went with it, which was really, really cool to see. So it was basically kind of, the direction was just, you know, general reaction, nothing too distracting and nothing too bombastic, of course. But he was very good at keeping it natural and just kind of encouraging us to live in these characters. And I was very delighted my shade could be immortalized. It was very cool.
What is Paul Schrader like as a director to act and perform in front of? That you have this one, he's one of the kind of classic kind of Hollywood directors, you know, he's done so many amazing and incredible films, and First Reformed is obviously one of them. What's he like as a director, and what kind of working underneath him makes him so special?
He was so lovely to work with. I was shocked, honestly, at how hands-on he was. I mean, I've done projects, I did a commercial spot a few years back, and the directors weren't even on set with us. They were giving direction to an assistant director through a walkie, and they were in an office somewhere. So I've kind of run the gamut of set life and seeing the way that different people do things. And I mean, easily Paul Schrader could be one of those very classic directors who, you know, has an AD filter everything to the actors, and, you know, has the different crew members doing things for him. But he wasn't like that at all. He was on set with us. He learned everyone's names. He was, you know, moving around with us. He was very deliberate with his vision. It felt like you were working with somebody who really knew what he wanted, and he knows how to talk to actors, and he knew how to ask for it. And it was a really amazing experience being there and being under such iconic figures, and watching him interact with Ethan, and, you know, watching Ethan take in our performance, and just watching these people interact with each other was really, really, really cool. It was a very, very life-changing, eye-opening experience.
What was the kind of feedback you were getting from, like, Ethan and Paul on your performance?
Both Ethan and Paul were delightful. Ethan was so complimentary. He also sat there for, I believe, if I remember correctly, every single take of ours, even the ones that he wasn't in the background for. And he really didn't have to do that. I've worked with big names where they just sat in their trailer until they were called on set. They were nice enough, but we had no interaction at all. Ethan was there in the back of that church watching us sing every single tape, which was just so cool. And it felt so amazing that if somebody like Ethan Hawke could sit there and take in your performance and respect you as an artist. And after every single take, he was like, "You guys sound awesome. It's really, really lovely to watch you guys." And the same with Paul. Paul was very complimentary and just seemed really happy with the outcome. And, you know, it was a lot of trust. It's like, we trust you guys to blindly learn the song and to come in and to do your work. And, you know, we trusted them to give us a very safe, secure working environment. And it really was. It was everything that you could possibly want it to be.
That, as someone that loves the Before trilogy, knowing that Ethan Hawke is one of the good guys is music to my ears. That's a huge takeaway for me.
Yes, yeah, he really was. He really was. And, I mean, not even in one of those ways where, you know, he wasn't even standoffish. He was so participatory. It was very, very, very cool to see, because you really never know which way it's going to go. He really was one of the good guys.
What did you think about the song choice itself? I mean, the themes of the song really tie in incredibly well to the film, and then for it to be part of the marketing campaign, I mean, I just as you kind of mentioned, obviously, the trailer, I just had a quick look at it there, and it's like, that's a trailer where your singing, your voice has been viewed like 5.7 million times as a trailer. You are soundtracking that piece of art, and people love to watch these kind of A24 trailers. What's it like to know that, you know, this job that you've kind of done for like a day, you know, you've gone in, performed this song amazingly well, has then gone on to be part of a big marketing campaign, and that you are heard and watched on people's phones, people's earphones, you know, being a real part of what maybe got people to go see this film in the first place?
Yeah, that was probably the most amazing part of this whole experience. My mind was absolutely, completely and utterly blown. I had no idea that they were going to be using that song for the trailer until the trailers came out. And I just, you know, I keep track of the projects that I do. And I basically went on their Instagram one day to watch the trailer, and I was like, oh my gosh, they used our song in the trailer, which was so cool. I mean, the song selection was so interesting because I also didn't know that there was another choir number in the movie, and the song that they sing during that number, I believe at the funeral, is actually a contemporary song that's a choir arrangement of it. So it's a very different vibe to go between the contemporary classic feeling adaptation and a very heavy hymn like Blood of the Lamb. I mean, it's called Blood of the Lamb, you know, which I think conveys the theme so well. And I think the vibe matches that trailer so well in ways that I could never have imagined. I was really just starstruck. I, of course, sent it to all of my family and my close friends, and they were all like, "We can hear you so clear." And I was just like, "I know, that's crazy." You know, because there are two female parts. There's a high part and the low part. And that low part, I sang. That's crazy. But they also were gracious enough to give us a soundtrack credit on IMDb for the film as well. So, yeah. And then, you know, the Oscar nomination, and all of a sudden my voice is not only in an Oscar-nominated film, but in the trailer and on the soundtrack of an Oscar-nominated film, which is still to this day, I truly can't believe that I can say that out loud. It was a really amazing, amazing experience.
When did you go from you've seen the trailer to when's the first time that you get to sit down and watch the film and see your performance?
So I think it couldn't have been too long in between. And I'm pretty sure I had a run at the New York Film Festival at Lincoln Center a few months before it actually came out for a commercial run. And I missed it during that run. And I didn't even know that it ran for the New York Film Festival. And I had a friend who went to go see it. And my friend messaged me on Instagram and was like, I just saw you performing on screen at Lincoln Center. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm at home in my pajamas. And it turned out the movie released there. So that was really incredible to know that people saw it beforehand. I ended up going to see it just downtown at a little indie movie house. It was probably a few months in between the trailer. I didn't really realize the reception, and I didn't really realize the implications behind it until I saw it. And I saw the trailers, I saw kind of everything that was coming before it. Because, you know, even with big names behind a movie, when I shot it, it really kind of, it felt like, and it was more billed as, you know, an indie through and through. It didn't really feel like it was going to be this very iconic, you know, movie critic's dream. It didn't feel like it was even trying to be an Oscar contender. And my boyfriend and I went to a little indie movie house in Manhattan, and we sat there and we watched the movie that I was in the theater with other people. And it was a very funny experience. It was very cool to watch. And then later on, it was put on Amazon Prime, which I don't know if it's still on Amazon Prime, but we got to watch it again on Amazon Prime. So it was very cool.
What's it like when you see your scene within like the context of this entire film, a film that has generated a lot of debate, discussion, it can polarize people in some ways. What's it like when you see what part you play within this kind of greater whole?
I think, honestly, I couldn't have asked for a better role in this particular film. I think one of the things, going back to something I said a little bit earlier, one of the things that I find so quirky and fun about that scene is it really kind of is this moment of levity in this very, very, very serious landscape. The film absolutely is controversial, but it's very clearly meant to be controversial, and it's meant to kind of mess around with your head and your perception of things, and mess around with the characters' heads and the characters' perception of things. And I think that moment in the church, which is really towards the beginning of the film, is this moment of simplicity in the whole movie. And I think it's this moment of levity. And I think that it's a moment where maybe Ethan Hawke's character is experiencing like the only part of peace and joy that he experiences in the entire film, where he really is just simply, you know, waiting for this woman to be done with her choir lesson. But they didn't need to keep the whole song in the movie, which is another thing that blew my mind, you know, because you go and you record something like that, but there are so many things in movies and TV that get cut out in the final product, you know? So when I saw it and I saw that they kept the whole song in the movie, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is truly crazy. They did not have to keep this whole song. And I think that it really is this moment of kind of, there are moments of light in the darkness. And I think I couldn't have asked for a better role, because I never like to take things too seriously, just, you know, as a rule in life. And, you know, to play these kind of like quirky ne'er-do-well, like scrappy choir students. acted, I think is really a fun addition to a movie that's very largely serious.
What kind of impact does being involved in a film like First Reformed have on your career when you can put that onto your CV, your IMDb, you know, oh, I'm the star of a Oscar nominated kind of film? Does it have much of an impact?
Yeah, well, I get asked to do really cool podcasts sometimes, which is really exciting. Yeah, I mean, when you contacted me to do this, I was amazed because the movie's been out for a good chunk of time, but I think a movie like that does have such lasting impact on a career, and it wasn't something that I was banking on when I shot it. Like I said, you know, it was just this job that my agents got me that I didn't even audition for, you know? Of course, it was an amazing opportunity, but I didn't really expect it to blow up the way it did. And then it did, and it really, truly, it's something I'm so proud of, and it's something that, it's just perpetually cool to me, honestly. it's another one of those things that I'm starstruck to say it. And when the Oscar nomination came out and, you know, the reception came out and even the controversy, you know, there are so many films that come out that don't really leave a lasting impression at all. And hearing people talk about what their takeaway was from it and the parts that stuck with them and the art style, it really was like, oh, my gosh, like, wow, what a cool, cool thing to be involved in.
What are the kind of things that people should look forward to? Because, like, for me, I've kind of got my note on the notes of, obviously, Bully came out post sort of First Reformed. What kind of other things can people maybe look out for kind of in the future?
So Bully just came out. It's the first feature that I played a lead in. It's really, really, really exciting. I got to work with some amazing, amazing actors. So that's coming out, and there are a few other projects that are under wraps that I can't really talk too much about, one of the things that really brings me a lot of pride is I actually collaborate with my little brother a lot. He's a really, really, really talented up-and-coming filmmaker. He is incredibly gifted in cinematography, and he's still currently a student, we've collaborated on a number of short films, one of which stars Davi Santos, who is an amazing actor who was just on Tell Me a Story on CBS. And he's a long time, dear, dear friend of mine. We grew up in Astoria and Queens together. So that's really exciting for me, is kind of telling these new stories and just getting together with some of the closest people in my life and putting them on the screen and seeing what sticks. Those are kind of the exciting projects for me. I'm writing a feature currently, which is also really exciting. I've always been seriously immersed in the writing world in some capacity or another. I think this year focusing on really creating our own work is really exciting to me. But, you know, the grind never stops. There's always other exciting things going on.
We always pose this question to everyone that we get on the show of, like, what is your opinion on sort of A24? And what are the kind of the highlights of their filmography for you?
I mean, A24 just does endlessly amazing work all around. Now I need to, like, get up a list of A24. So I'm sure I've seen quite a few over the last year. Okay. So of this very short list that I'm looking at right now, I would say at the very top of the list, Ex Machina, which I think absolutely, completely, and utterly did not get the reception I think it deserved personally. Ex Machina is one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen. I think that Oscar Isaac's performance, I think he was robbed of an Oscar for that performance. I think there's, goodness gracious, there are very, very few performances that are as complex as Oscar Isaac's performance in that. But I also think another pick from this list that doesn't get talked about a lot is Obvious Child, starring Jenny
Slate. Great choice.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that's another film I respect, I think right now in this day and age, in this political climate of making movies, there are so many incredible female comedians that started out as female comedians that are now delving into these indie feeling works, like Jenny Slate, like Adie Bryant and Shrill, that are so incredibly based in reality and so incredibly relatable, but yet it has that indie movie vibe to it, and I think that is so incredibly cool. It's exactly the kind of work that I would absolutely love to do. Obvious Child was one of those films that I saw Obvious Child in the movie theaters, and I didn't really know what I was going in for, and it was just kind of like, you know, indie movie pick of the week at, I believe, Sunshine Cinemas downtown, which is no longer there, which is really sad. But I was just absolutely, completely, and utterly blown away. I think there's something so unbelievably clever and heartfelt and just relatable about being able to tell that story in the way that they told that story and not make it this grandiose tragedy about this woman having to make this really hard decision, and actually ground it in the reality of you can be a woman and you can go through this and you can be funny and, you know, you can have a lot of complex feelings and still carry on with your life. And I think that film is one of my favorite films of the last decade, for sure.
Some excellent choices there. I couldn't agree more. Obvious Child was one I watched for the first time as we started to do this podcast, and I really loved it. I think it's definitely one of the standouts of their kind of early filmography.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree. But yeah, Ex Machina, I would say, I don't know which one I like better. They're obviously so different. But Ex Machina is also one of the greatest sci-fi movies of, as well, the last decade. I mean, the twists and the turns and the production value and the concept. And I mean, it really feels so Westworld before Westworld was Westworld, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And if kind of people wanted to keep up to date with, like, your career, your short films, kind of these future projects that we've got to keep a bit hush-hush just now, where's kind of the best places to kind of follow you and your career?
Yeah, so, I mean, IMDb is a great resource. Most stuff gets put up on IMDb, but my Instagram as well is a really good place to kind of, like, check in and see what I'm up to. I always post on my Instagram when I'm shooting a new project, or, you know, a new project is finished. One of the things I collaborated with my little brother this summer, which is so cool to me, we shot this music video for one of his friend's indie bands, called Arvern, which is just, like I said, music is such a huge influence on me, and I just strive to do these music-centric projects like Juno. And so to be able to collab on a project specifically for a new up-and-coming band is so cool. So Instagram is a great resource. IMDb is a great resource. I do throw things up on YouTube as well, but I feel like Instagram is kind of the conduit to the YouTube, where if something really cool that I just did has been put up on YouTube, I'll post about it and be like, you know, link in the bio or something like that.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thanks for